Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until one. Not a bad day in Dublin town this Wednesday morning. There's no pomp and ceremony today, just back to the humdrum state of the nation, really. It is the 12th of November. I was looking up, it's World Pneumonia Day, according to the WHO. That's how shy of events we are from here to December, and that's how I noticed. Let your fingers do the chatting, as always, in the usual way, the WhatsApp, north, south, east and west, 0870 32 32 32. And for your longer letters, your emails are welcome, oliver at rte.ie. We got so much to do today. We have our aunties of agony coming in to fix all of the problems that might be mithering you this weather. 51551 is the text, and the emails, I just said, you can get into contact before they come in. And Dermot O'Leary will be with us shortly as well. Dermot O'Leary, massive TV name, hasn't he been for years now? You go way back to The X Factor, those massive, massive shows. More recent years, he's been on ITV This Morning, the programme with Alison Hammond, and they are the two most cheerful people beyond there. And Dermot O'Leary wears his Irishness on his sleeve and his heart, doesn't he? Wexford is his brand of Irishness. So apologies to all of Kilkenny, which I think is the only place that truly sort of has a Wexford complex. It must be the coastline, is it? That's what's done it for them. 51551 is the text as well. But all over the place, across the media coverage in the last 24 hours, President Connolly's purple rain has begun. Lots of parsing through her words today and the event and the speech. We were discussing the presidential chair with Dobbo here yesterday, and there was expectations the former British royal seat that used to be used by tiny Queen Vic herself would be back in action, as it had been for presidents up to 2004. And it was recently refurbished by Dublin Castle. And we got this in notes, official notes in the run-up to the inauguration. But instead, the new modern swoopy option that was used for Michael D. It's a lovely chair on its own, but does it seem a bit out of sorts with Dublin Castle's otherwise period features? That was used anyway, the swoopy chair, I'm calling it. The whole seating arrangements have caused great consternation in the coverage. They just seem to fall apart. Previous inaugurations, we saw the various speeches, the new president generally flanked on either side by the former presidents that had gone before. This time you had Michael D. on one side, that's correct. And then who's that? Leo Varadkar in the other? He wasn't a president. Was this maybe something, give the bereft right-wingers a token seat in this new wave of aura socialism? And I noticed Leo Varadkar is wearing an EU flag badge and sat very stony-faced. He's got an unfortunate resting rich face, doesn't he? Behind the president during her whole speech, which most of the country has seen by now, didn't look happy at all. Because, of course, President Connolly was criticised by his party for opposing EU treaties in that campaign. Mary Robinson, who I thought should have been there, she was two rows way back. You couldn't see her through the whole thing, even though the whole event seemed to be like a tribute to her. It must have been some sort of shambolic seating mistake. Seating was a big source of ire for people watching on. Socialist Ruth Coppinger tweeted, "Brass neck on Padraig Tobin sitting up at the front of Dublin Castle when he launched a spoil the vote campaign." I presume the tone she intended when she tweeted this thing. Patrick Tobin, of course, the leader of AIM2, who announced that he had spoiled his vote. He hit back online, because this is what happens now in the world we live in. "I didn't launch hashtag spoil the vote." He couldn't help himself use it again. "I didn't vote for Catherine. That doesn't mean I shouldn't be magnanimous and wish her well. Sad to see this rabble-rousing baloney," which he spells with him, with a U, B-U-L-L. The most offensive part of that whole thing. And I also... isn't that the worst, most backhanded salutation? "I wish you well." He might as well have said, "A curse upon her." That's basically, I wish them well. Do you know? Anyway, the president did speak a glauert, much less Gaeilge than expected, and then was whisked away to inspect the Irish military industrial complex, of which he's now the commander of. And they were beautifully appointed in their full dress uniform. Now, I do wonder, though, having seen it, about the slightly run-down feel of the ceremony? I mean, do we tone everything down because we're a republic and we don't want to have the kind of flashy furnishings and touches that they're from monarchies? Or are we just a bit out of practice and a shonky Irish way of doing this? I'm not sure. The scenes were chaotic and the guests tried to take their seats. Miriam Lord is describing it like an Irish wedding because Simon Harris walks the president-elect down the aisle at the start. But also the Irish wedding bit was just rushing for seats and not knowing where to go. You had those, who decided to get those horrible red chairs straight out of a three-star hotel conference room, clashing with the blue carpet. The ministers and the TDs were all on their phones throughout the whole thing, doing selfies, staring at the screens. I mean, such manners, really. Even the now former president, Michael D, went hoking about for his phone during the speech. And I also wondered, did the room really need to be floodlit? Shiny heads everywhere. This is an Irish event. You know, use a chandelier and some subtle lighting, please. And then the dignitaries had cartons of water at the leg of each chair. They were slugging from them through the whole thing. They were like hungover lads drinking straight from the milk carton at the fridge. Now, was that because I'm reading here in the Mail's coverage that across from Dublin Castle, Brogan's was the watering hole of choice? And various politicians ended up going there. Members of Independent Ireland, Minister Peter Burke and others enjoyed a quick pre-event drink. The event started at noon. So no wonder they were slugging from cartons. And just in this kind of rundown feel. The presidential car then was an Audi Grand, but there was a minibus after it. It was like a hen party when they were leaving Dublin Castle. There's a few things we could borrow, I think, from events overseas, because even the Americans manage a bit of flair. Now, I must say, the Defence Forces, Ogle na Héireann part, where the new Commander-in-Chief, she inspected the soldiers. That was really classy now. That looked cool, especially doing so in the very spot where the British handed over power to the Free State in 1922. Indeed, the occasion meant that the last Viceroy of Ireland had just arrived for the last time ever from the Viceregal Lodge, which of course is now Ors an Uachtaráin. If you're going to do symbolism, that was a bit decent. The speech itself, seen as quite controversial around the place. I see Harry McGee in the Irish Times says there was no mistaking the political nature of it. Unusual for an inauguration. She did talk about her campaign being dismissed as too far out, too left-wing. Mary Regan similarly writing in the Irish Independent that it was a divisive speech. The Pártas Gaeilge, she said, lashed the political parties the most. The political parties in power, because she was talking about the ordinary people struggling because of terrible public services, despite the wealth of the state. And in Mary Regan's piece, one TD said it offended people, but it offended the right people. So they were quite happy on that side of the political persuasions. Perhaps most controversially, we noticed, it didn't get coverage, but Sabina Higgins, a very warm woman by all accounts, and when the newly sworn in president was making her way back down the aisle, a veritable newly married bride to the state, the former First Lady, Sabina, she put her hands out and gave Catherine Connolly a double-handed face clasp. It was a very awkward moment. And President Connolly very quickly, very firmly took the woman by the wrists in a sort of a, no, you're grand there, thanks, sort of gesture. It should be a meme, you know, over familiarity, darling. You have to read the room. And off she went, leaving poor Sabina chastened in her wake. She heads back to Galway. As I say, the Daily Mail has coverage of bits and bobs. It didn't go entirely swimmingly, is a pun here, because during the maiden speech, President Connolly mistakenly referred to the North's First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, as Michelle Smith when thanking the attendees for coming to the event. That was an unfortunate moment, particularly because President Connolly had some problems with the North, never really mentioned the place as a TD, and probably, you know, didn't enamour herself to the Shinners who had endorsed her when she repeatedly called it Northern Ireland. Only one unionist made it to the inauguration, Steve Aiken. He's an assembly member for the Ulster Unionists. The DUP leader, First Minister, that is, Deputy First Minister Emma Little-Pengelly, and the leader of the party, Gavin Robinson, were not available because it was Armistice Day, 11th of November, the Poppy Day, essentially, important to that community up north. But one of them could have gone, couldn't they, surely, in a gesture and all that sort of stuff. What else? The seagulls were tormenting the castle courtyard. People wondering, did they get the proper permissions to fly overhead, like Jim Gavin's campaign failed to do with the Fianna Fáil drones? You see Fine Gael Senator Evan McCillan caught selfieing during the event. Oh my God. Loads of coverage of the purple outfit by Louise Kennedy, which you heard about on this programme first, thanks to the reportage of a young journalist known as Brian Dobson. It was a little unfortunate, wasn't it, that it was exactly the same shade of purple worn by the Church of Ireland Archbishop of Dublin. But that poor man's name is Michael Jackson. So he's had a lifetime of suffering, the poor man. I was looking at the Auris official website as well. It's been updated with Michael D and all of his events consigned to the past engagement section. But it's interesting because if you look at the most recent duties, it kind of shows the new life that the president and her family can look forward to. All the activities that presidents do that rarely make the news. What was he doing in the last few weeks? Tree planting in honour of former President Patrick Hillary with his family. He went to an indie film launch in the Lighthouse Cinema in Dublin. There was a photo call with various ambassadors. Various tidy town committees came to visit the president. Afternoon tea. There's always afternoon tea. And they reckon that Michael Dean Sabina hosted 20,000 people for afternoon tea in the Auris in those 14 years. The invited guests of the most recent one, people from museums, local museums, trade unions, the invited guests, people like that. Authors drop in every now and again on what they label courtesy calls. Quite a few of them do keep showing up and they're photographed in the study. Simon Harris was one of them last week. It kind of highlights that your life is not really your own when you become the Uachtaráin of this country. On the texter, this texter saying, I pity the crowd on the floor. They all had to turn their necks. Lots of pains in the neck today. Well, there was actually loads of screens lined up left and right on the walls and they didn't notice that. They kept looking at the real thing because if you're that close, you would. But that was the idea. But it looked a little shabby in places, didn't it? But the speech went off anyway and has set out the stall, basically. Okay, what else is happening around the place? The WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. Ah, fast walkers. Are you a fast walker? Are you a slovenly walker who prefers a stroll over walking? Well, Slovakia is set to impose speed limits for pedestrians. Fast walkers are facing a fine of 100 euro if they go over the maximum speed of 6 kilometres an hour. Apparently it's to protect more vulnerable elderly pedestrians from bicycles or e-scooters. Well, why do they have to imposed on the footpaths where presumably not allowed. It has led to jokes and confusion over the possibility of fines for being a nippy pedestrian. It's particularly because of something called the New Bridge in Bratislava in Slovakia, where there's shared cycles, cycling and pedestrianing and all that sort of stuff. I looked up New Bridge. It's quite Irish of the Slovakians to call it the New Bridge. It was built in the 60s. It's like a lot of towns in Ireland have 200-year-old streets called the New Street. It's coming into effect on the 1st of January. But how fast do we walk? Is 6 kilometres a very slow? Studies suggest healthy adults tend to average 5 kilometres an hour. So if you're in decent physical condition, you're way, way beyond that Slovakian limit, basically. 6 kilometres, that's a slow walk. Other people online having fun with wondering, is there homophobia in this? Because there is a social media trend that theorises that gay men walk at a much faster pace than slovenly heterosexuals. Straight people, look behind you. Chances are there's a gay person trying to get past because you're moving at such a glacial pace, is one famous tweet. And GQ magazine have been wondering, Gentleman's Quarterly, why do gay men walk so fast? Various trends believe that if Google Maps say it's going to be a 15-minute journey, that's 10, 12 tops for the gays because they're fleeing the straits or they're walking to the beat of Womanizer by Britney Spears. There was even a petition once in Britain to create gay walking lanes because gay men have places to be. It's true. I'm a very fast walker. But I think it's because cultures are innately uncomfortable on Dublin streets. So we just have to get off them as quickly as possible. That's the theory. The Pope has announced his top 4 favourite films of all time. Why is he doing this? He is going to meet with dozens of Hollywood stars this weekend, including Cate Blanchett, Chris Pine and Adam Scott. Strange collection. Special audience at the Vatican. The Pope from will also be meeting Spike Lee. Oh, good. Oscar winning director George Miller and Gus Van Sant. Interesting choice of directors there. He wants to deepen dialogue with the world of cinema. This is jealousy because Pope Francis, the late man, hosted an event in June last year for comedians, which included Stephen Colbert, Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Fallon, wasn't Patrick Keelty and Ardal O'Hanlon and Tommy Tiernan, I think, among them as well. This time, Dave Franco, Viggo Mortensen and other people I've never heard of are going to be meeting him. And so ahead of this event, meeting the Hollywood stars, Pope Leo's announced his 4 favourite movies.
My 4 favourite films. It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart from 1946. The Sound of Music from 1965 with Julie Andrews. Ordinary People, the year was 1980. The stars were Donald Sutherland and Mary Tyler Moore. La Vita è Bella, 1997, Roberto Benigni.
Roberto Benigni, a beautiful Italian. Life is Beautiful, we know it as in English. 2 Nazi movies, by the way. two Nazi related things there, Sound of Music and La Vita Bella. Benedict would be bursting into a sweat at the sound of that. He has a lovely kind of audiobook voice, doesn't he, Pope Leo?
One of those nice kind of audiobook voices that you just go there and go, what happened was the following.
Not on his list, I noticed, comedy, unless you're including La Vita Bella, it's meant to be a comedy, or Conclave, disappointing. Ordinary People, I didn't know, 1980 movie, Robert Redford directed, as he said, it won the Best Picture Oscar. It's a family drama starring Donald Sutherland, and the whole family are overcome with grief and guilt and everything. Oh, grief and guilt. Very, very Catholic of Pope Leo. But he's becoming quite an interesting fella. I'd like if he did more of that sort of thing. Kamala Harris is also in the news again. She's been talking about when she went away on foreign trips as US vice president and left the husband behind in the Naval Observatory where they live. That's Doug Emhoff. He was known as America's first second gentleman. Yes, she was telling the River Cafe boss Ruth Rogers on a podcast that when she was going off, she would bring all her staff with her. And that meant nobody was left behind to cook for Doug Emhoff. What did the vice president do? She started cooking a big batch of bolognese herself, which would then freeze so that the lawyer could eat while he was. What a helpless donkey of a man this fella is. Here's Kamala Harris talking about minding this fella.
Having been the first woman vice president of the United States,
yes.
48 vice presidents of the United States were men.
Yeah.
We lived in the vice president's residence and were supported by naval enlisted aides. If I was out of the house, they all left to travel with me. And nobody would cook for Doug. As vice president of the United States,
going to the song.
I made a few times a big pot of bolognese to freeze containers so that my husband could eat when I was doing the business of the United States of America.
I miss her voice so much. United States of America there. She has previously said that he's useless in the kitchen, basically. He's an apprentice kind of thing. But that's very disappointing, isn't it? Very disappointing for the whole place. And the presidential inauguration, Catherine is on to us. Did you notice the number of people scrolling their phones? Yes, we did. While waiting for Catherine Connolly to arrive, like a crowd of teenagers. And she's using the sideways laughing, crying face emoji, says Catherine. Catherine, do you not hear yesterday's programme? It's dynamite from now on. Dynamite. I tell you what is dynamite. This song from Brona Gallagher. Yes, the Irish Derry actress. Pulp Fiction, The Commitments. It's a hell of a tune and it's brand new. Enjoy. Turn the lights back on. We gotta split this storm.